I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, so throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Season 2 of the 147 Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour Champion and former Champion of the World, the magician, Sean Murphy.
And it's a big hello from me, Phil Seymour, to you, Sean Murphy. How are you, Sean?
And a big hello from me. Yes, how are you?
Yeah, not bad. I am in the frozen wasteland that is Scotland.
Or is it cold?
It's bloody freezing, if I'm honest. I don't know what I expect at the end of October.
You had some day the other day, didn't you? I saw on your socials you were up bright and early for the first fly out of Belfast, flown back to England. You must have gone home, recouped, a bit of time with the family, straight in the car and straight up to Scotland. Who do you think you are, me?
No, because I was only in the UK. You normally over in China or Germany or somewhere. I'll be honest. I'm tired. I am tired. Okay. I'll hold my hands up to that. I am tired right now. It was a 5 o'clock taxi yesterday morning. It's Tuesday night, by the way, recording this. It was a 5 o'clock taxi yesterday morning from the apartments we're staying in Belfast to go to the airport. And it was a proper snooker airport, by the way, because I left the apartments with the, as I described her, the terribly terrifying Tatiana Wollaston, the referee, which she likes that tag, by the way. Mark King, another referee, they were in the taxi with me. We got to the airport, bumped into Chris Wakelin and his friends, who lost in the final, of course, on Sunday night to Judd Trump. And then there was cameramen there. I bumped into Tai in there, our Chinese friend, who does all the Chinese media. And yeah, it was a serious snooker airport. Just to Chris Wakelin's friend, by the way, Chris Wakelin's mate who travels with him, his wife had come over for the final, which was lovely, very lovely lady. And she was telling me in the airport how much she enjoys Sean Murphy's podcast.
Right.
At which point Chris started laughing and said, "You do know who Phil is, right?" Which I thought was lovely, just goes to show no one knows who I am. Marvellous.
You sure she wasn't referring to the one I do privately without you?
No, it wasn't that one. No, definitely not that one.
Okay.
No. It was I think it was this one. Do you do one on...
So anyway, the Northern Ireland Open has just finished. What a great week it was up in Belfast. I'm not sure who was in Belfast longest. Was it me or was it you? I'm not sure. It's
it was
very
close.
Rare that we cross paths now at these Home Nations events. You only turn up for the last 3 days.
Oh, you know me. I only come for the glory bits. There's, do you know, players have started picking up on that as well. I think Jack Lizowski came into the media centre after his win in, was it his quarter-final win? He came in the media centre, oh, Phil's here. Must be getting to the business end then. I was like, cheeky monkey. That amazed me, you know. Jack Lizowski against Chris Wakelin. Lizowski's 2 years older than Wakelin.
I know. I remember actually hearing that on the commentary, and that was my big takeaway from it.
I've got to, for the record, because I know Chris listens to the podcast religiously. Chris, I'm not saying you look old. I am saying Jack looks young. Okay, it's the other way around.
Oh no, I was going the other way. I was saying that Chris looks old. But you know, as the person who knocked me out of the tournament. I feel like I'm allowed to give Chris a bit of stick.
Oh, wow. That's...
Whilst we're there, what a place to start.
Yes, let's.
Can we talk about the Chris Wakelin chalk pouch?
Right. Now,
can we go there?
I'm going to drop a bombshell right now that is going to shock the world, okay? Shock, and I mean shock the world. You have mugged Chris Wakelin off for his chalk pouch enough times, okay? And the line you always use is, why do you need a chalk pouch when you've got perfectly good pockets? You've said that so many times, right? Yeah?
I mean, that feels reasonable to me.
It does. The next time you see Chris Wakelin at a snooker table, check out his trousers. They don't have pockets.
Rubbish.
Mind blown. They don't have pockets.
Absolute rubbish.
He doesn't have pockets in his trousers. I've seen them. I've seen them up close. He does not have pockets. He had a suit made by our friend Danny Rhodes at Jacob Bryan Taylor's in Huddersfield. And he was going through, oh, you can have anything you want. You can have this kind of stitching. You can have that kind of lining, blah, blah, blah. And Chris said, well, what I really want is no pockets. And he said, what? He says, I don't want any pockets. He says, he's more comfortable without pockets because he's quite a slim chap, is Chris. He's very slender. He's you know, fit, unlike me and you. And it's...
Why don't you just marry him, Phil? Why don't you just marry him?
And bald men don't do it for me for some reason. And he said, I don't want pockets. So he made him a suit with trousers with no pockets. So wow. You cannot use your pockets argument with Chris Wakelin in his chalk pouch. It's gone.
And I wonder, Chris, you know, I'm talking directly to you, Chris, now, because I know you listen to the show. Did you have those trousers made without pockets just to spite me?
I think so you did.
So that you had to use the pouch. Have you done that just to pee me off?
Do you know, on a more serious note, now, I tipped Chris Wakelin as one to watch this year. Okay, yeah. Start the season on this podcast, I said, keep an eye on Chris Wakelin because he's my one to watch. I think yours was Jordan Brown and mine was Chris. What a performance from him in Northern Ireland. And I know he knocked you out, which I know that hurts and everything else. Particularly the semi-final against Jack Lizowski. He was superb. I think there was four frames in that. Jack didn't pot a ball. The final three frames, he throws him out. That is rare against Jack Lizowski, but Chris played out of his... No, I'm not going to say... In fact, I'm not going to say played out of his skin. Chris showed what he can do in Northern Ireland, and he came up short in the final against a very, very good Judd Trump, but he did lead the final 2-1. You know, and he not only played very well, I think... He's shown everyone who he is and what he's all about as well, because the public over there, bear in mind, he's playing Judd Trump, who's been one of the biggest names in snooker for the last 5 years since he won the Northern Ireland Open in 2018. He won the crowd over there, and they loved him to bits. What a performance.
Yeah, he played well all week, and as you said, he knocked me out in the last 16. You know, I was feeling good about things, especially after the win against Marco, which... You know, could have gone either way and perhaps should have definitely gone Marco's way towards the end, put in a good performance in the game after that against Sean O'Sullivan. I think I had something like a 98.7% pot success or something in that match. So, you know, was playing well. But Chris just completely, you know, he was like a fireman, wasn't he? He just put out the fire in that match, and he played far better than I did, and he was good for the win. The trick to Chris Wakelin's performances is when he scores, when he puts the big breaks together and finishes frames in one visit, that tends to lead to him having a good week because he's got everything else. His tactical game, his safety game, his shot selection, his composure, his self-control of his emotions, all of those things he's got. I think, I'm sure he'd admit this, he's, you know, himself, I think those years of practicing in the ATAC snooker club in Nuneaton with Mark Selby and others, you know, the fruits of that are really coming to the fore now. Now, I know he no longer plays in that club and, he's working on things as well as we all are all the time, but you can just see in him, he's got all the attributes of a winner. And I think when he ties that together with, you know, that heavy scoring, which is the difference, I think, between the winners and everyone else, that ability to put frames away in one visit, when he puts that together, he tends to have good performances. And there was a match we played in China several seasons ago where he just blew me away. And I think he knocked maybe two or three centuries in against Stephen Hendry in one of Stephen's matches last season or the year before. Like, he can seriously play. And it's great to see, him starting to put that together. And, of course, it's great for you having tipped him at the start of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to be right for a change. It's funny, I interviewed Judd on, I think it was Saturday after he won his semi before the final. And I asked him about Chris. And he said, and then he said it again after the final, he said, look, there's a lot of players who get to a ranking event final or win a ranking event, and then you don't sort of really hear from them afterwards. He said, I get the feeling that's not the case with Chris Wakelin. He said, I get the feeling that his talent, his ability and everything else goes further than that. And actually, what we're seeing now is the start rather than the end. And I think what Judd was making the point was that he's one of these players who is maybe coming good a little bit older, which is absolutely fine. But, you know, he thrived on it. When I introduced him out at the final, this was really interesting. He talked about the crowd previously. And I introduced him out at the final, and he walked down the stairs, and he sort of paused for a moment. I saw this. I don't think he was actually caught on TV. I think they went to a crowd shot. He sort of paused for a moment and just inhaled. And I thought, oh, he's loving this. He's taking it in. And it was lovely. It was really, really good to see that. It's got to mean something, hasn't it? It's got to mean something, that moment. When you walk out, the Waterfront Hall in Belfast is a very, very special place. And the noise in there is amazing because the fans over in Northern Ireland are brilliant. And he seems to just come down the steps and just go, and then go. And I thought, yeah, he's got this. He's enjoying this. So,
well, listen, I just think whilst we're talking about atmosphere, you know, I have to just veer off down this cul-de-sac because it struck me during the week that, you know, the atmosphere is unbelievable in the Waterfront in Belfast, as it's unbelievable in the Crucible, the Barbican, the Ali Pali, and typically all these venues that we play in that are specifically performance-based venues.
Yep.
So, you know, not to beat the drum again, but, you know, and I know there's loads of reasons for it. We've been down this road before, but, you know, it's not a coincidence that we always talk about great atmospherics, great environments, great crowds in venues that are designed for performance, not leisure centres. So, you know, if WST are listening, more of that, please, because if you give us the means to put on a great show, we'll do the rest. Now, we've not even spoke about him yet, but he is the man of the moment. He's won 472 matches on the bounce without losing.
Is that all?
You know, I mean, maybe we should just take the rest of the season off and give him the rest of the trophies. He's been churning out performance after performance. You know, English Open, straight to Wuhan, straight to Belfast.
Right, well, let's...
Judd Trump, unbelievable at the moment.
Oh, ridiculous. Let's just rewind ever so slightly then, okay? You've mentioned it there. So he won the English. I think we did the podcast just after the English, didn't we? Before Wuhan.
And I think so.
At the end of the English, now Judd won the English, and we're leaving the venue. I was chatting to him and Jack, his brother, and at that point, they were still undecided whether or not they were going to go to Wuhan. They'd said publicly they were, but they'd sort of said, not 100%, not 100%, just one here, which is great, not 100%. They then booked flights to Wuhan. I think they won the English Open on the Sunday, flew the Monday. Did he play the Wednesday
I think he played twice on the Wednesday.
I think he played twice on Wednesday, yeah. So he flew over, arrived the Tuesday, played twice on Wednesday. He was saying something about he couldn't travel on the bullet train because you're not allowed to take your cue on the bullet train anymore.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
So they had to fly, which meant they had some like a six-hour stopover in Shanghai, I think, on the way.
Yeah.
Nightmare getting there. Went to Wuhan, won in Wuhan against all the odds. Because I'm shattered flying back from Belfast and driving to Scotland. You know what I mean? That is very small beer compared to what Judd Trump did to go and win in Wuhan. Came back from Wuhan, went to Belfast. He's won again in Belfast. You know, he's not lost a ranking event match for seemingly ages. He's won three on the bounce. That puts him in an exclusive club of five, which I think, off the top of my head, I think it's Henry Davis, Reardon, Ding, and now Judd Trump. It's his fourth Northern Ireland Open win. Amazing. I put this out on social media, actually. My first full event, my first final, was 5 years ago. And I think the second one that I did was a Northern Ireland Open. I've now announced Judd Trump as a winner 10 times in events, which I don't do that many events in a year, realistically. You know, I don't do the BBC events, don't do the ITV events now. He's been phenomenal, and he is phenomenal, isn't he?
Yeah, he's phenomenal. He's as they were explaining on the commentary during the week, you know, his Juddonaut moniker was given to him years ago, because once he gets up ahead of steam, you know, he's almost unstoppable, and he's just whatever. You know, bear in mind, before the English Open, it was a good 18 months, wasn't it, since he'd won previously. And, you know, he's unbeaten since Brentwood. He just finds something, and he's just so wonderful to watch. He's so gifted. And, of course, now what you see as well is, he's now building up that aura amongst the other players where even when they've got him beaten, they can't beat him.
No, well, I described him.
How many matches has he won in the last few weeks from, you know, an unwinnable position where the other player only has to stand up and they can't stand up?
Yeah, in the media centre, we've nicknamed him the Rocky Balboa of the Bays. Because he's on the ropes taking all those punches, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere. I mean, in the final he was only 2-1 down, but previous matches and the previous finals he's been down each time, and he's come back. And you know, we joked, it was Tom from World Snooker Tour said he's like the Rocky, I think he said he's like Rocky Balboa, so I added of the Bays, obviously, to make it mine. And he just keeps doing it. He keeps on getting knocked down, getting back up and going again. And that's, for me, that's a sign of a great player. If they can do that, that is a sign of a great player. If you can go behind and come back and keep doing that, you know, it shows a real steel in your mindset.
So if Judd is the Rocky Balboa, does that make his brother Jack Mick?
Yes. Yes, it does, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
He's 9'6", so you can tell him.
I'll tell him.
You can tell him. I'm not telling him that. You can tell him. Because he's like me stood on your shoulders, is Jack.
Goodness, he's a big lad.
He is a big lad. So there you go. So Wuhan Open, Judd Trump won. We can just put that on repeat, really, can't we? Northern Ireland Open, Judd Trump won.
Should we tell you the results of the International Championship, which is starting next week? Should we just do the results for that now?
Yeah, Judd Trump wins that. He then goes on, he wins a champion of champions, UK. He just wins everything now. That's it. It's just all Judd Trump this season.
The rest of us are just playing for second.
Yeah, that's all it is. We've mentioned the venue. You've mentioned the venue already. Waterfront Hall in Belfast. I list it as one of my favourites. It is special over there, isn't it?
It is. It's a wonderful venue. I mean, it's just the setup of it. You know, it looks great. And as I say, there definitely is something in these venues that are built specifically to perform to live audiences in. You know, there's something about the acoustics. There's something about just in these theatres and these venues that are designed for it, not where we have to shoehorn an event into some big empty space. But these venues that have been designed specifically for performance do tend to bring out the best in us. And, you know, I don't think that's coincidence. The water, I just think that low table shot, which Eurosport had through the final from behind the number two pocket, which is the, as you watch on the TV, the bottom left corner black pocket, we refer to that as the number two pocket. And it was sort of looking up across the table over the players, and you could see the, you know, the stalls and the circle, and the, it was like, it was phenomenal, like, you know, and it was packed. The place is packed.
Yeah, absolutely. Now on the crowds though, it's funny. Brilliant. I noticed there was a lot of kids. There was an awful lot of parents taking their children to snooker this weekend. Now, for me, as the MC walking around, it was more noticeable than I think any other tournament I've ever been at, actually. There was a lot of families there, a lot of, you know, mum, dad, two daughters, dad, son, dad, daughter. There was lots of people there with their kids, which is brilliant. You know, it's great to see. The Q zone was buzzing. We had a full-size star table with the WPBSA coaches over there who were doing a brilliant job, by the way. And then there was two or three of the smaller tables as well. I don't think I ever saw those tables without people on them playing on them, which was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. On a personal level, thank you to the crowd because everyone was great. Everyone was so welcoming. They were shaking so many hands in the walking through the lobby. But everyone over there was great. Yeah, Belfast, you absolutely did yourself proud, as you always do at that event. It's a brilliant event, and I love it.
Were you in the venue for the fire alarm when everyone had to evacuate?
Thankfully not.
Well, Robbie and I had just been out in the town for a coffee, and we were walking back to the hotel, and we were walking past, and there was the big fire alarm going off. There was a big fire engine outside. All the blues and twos were going, and everyone was ushering outside. Rumour was the Kyron Wilson had broke into a £20 note.
I thought you were going to say his cue had rubbed too hard on his glove, and it had friction and caused smoke.
No. He hasn't used his cue enough since wearing that glove to create any friction.
Oh, how harsh are you? That's harsh.
He'll have plenty of life left in his tip anyway.
Would you have been re-tipping cues today? All eight of them?
I've been re-tipping my cues today, yeah. Do you know, like, re-tipping cues, is a bit of a dark art. You could have Professor Snape, another Harry Potter reference that you won't get, teaching you how to mix the potions and what goes into this and what goes into that, because it's a bit of a mystery. And, of course, it's now twice as hard for me because I've got the two cues. And just to clear that up, because I was going for three cues. One of the cues I've sort of not discarded, but I've just put it to one side at the moment because it just doesn't quite perform as I'd like it to. So it's gone from three to two now. It's a bit of a miss. There's some mystique around it, but I quite enjoy it. I was absolutely fascinated to see the video that Stephen Hendry put out on his YouTube channel with John Paris there. Great to see behind the scenes of John's workshop.
Yeah, it was. Great video. That.
And he's been in that place like forever, I think. I think John's been there since Noah was a boy. To see how the cues are done. I was absolutely staggered that one of the best players of all time, seven-time champion of the world, admitted on camera that he had never and couldn't re-tip his own cue. Can you imagine Roger Federer saying he can't re-grip his own tennis racket or doesn't know how to do it?
Do you know if Roger Federer does?
No, but I bet he can. Not the question. It's not whether he does it. It's whether he can do it or not.
To be fair, Roger Federer could probably make ice cream in the desert, couldn't he? You know what I mean? He could do anything that money.
It was a bad walk example. On water. Roger Federer is the goat of everything. That was a terrible example. Do you know what I mean?
Can you imagine
that? The one of the best players ever can't put a tip on. He'd never tried it. Never done it.
Yeah, madness. Well, look, listen. Let's talk
what
about
is that. About?
Let's talk about multiple cues now. I was watching on Eurosport when you first went out there with more than one cue, and Dave Hendon was so excited, like literally he was like a child at Christmas. And people thankfully cannot see mine and yours WhatsApp conversations because, as we said before, we'd probably be in prison if they could. And I messaged you. I'm going to give people a window into our world.
WhatsApp messages go missing, don't they, if you're to believe the press?
Ours do. And I messaged you and I said, go on, Sean, borrow a load of cues and take six out there tomorrow just to see what Dave does. If you'd done that, he'd have had a fit. But on a serious note, this made some waves. Now, it made some waves because of a certain other player by the name of Ronnie O'Sullivan, who was in the Eurosport studio when you used the two cues against Chris Wakelin and you lost in the last 16. And Ronnie was asked, and he had that cheeky smile.
Well, I don't think that's quite accurate, to be fair. I think this was the day after, or even the day after.
Oh, was it the day after?
Yeah, I think he was asked about the week and stuff. I certainly wasn't there.
Right, so oh no, you weren't there, no. He was asked, and he had that cheeky smile that Ronnie sometimes has, and he says, well, he's all right doing all that, you know, but it's maybe not the thing to do if you're getting pumped all the time. Maybe he needs to get a few wins under his belt first. Now, short memory, I'd suggest. Slightly short memory, considering that you've won Championship League already this season. You won the Tour Championship, the Players' Championship as well. But he said that. So it's only right that you get the opportunity to reply.
Yeah, I mean, listen, first and foremost, let me put this out there. Like, I can take a joke as much as the next person. You know, no one's... I love having a bit of crack with everyone. And, you know, if you're going to give it, you've got to be able to take it. But I didn't get it. I didn't understand what the joke was. I thought it was a bit of a cheap shot. But I didn't get it either, did you? I didn't understand what he meant because, as you've just said, I think I won three or four matches last week in Belfast. I'd taken multiple cues into the arena every time I walked out to play. Anyone who understands what I'm trying to do at the moment, what I'm searching for, understands that it's only towards the end of an event, really, that I'm probably going to need the second cue as conditions deteriorate. When was I meant to do it? So, jokes are fine. I hope he remembers who started it when it all goes wrong in the future, because unless you've been living under a rock for 20 years, you will know that, you know, we're not the best of friends. So I hope he remembers who started it. But I just didn't get it. Did you get it? Didn't understand it.
I think he was being cheeky. I think he was trying to stir things up, and he has, to be honest, because it went all over social media. As I said, he had that smile on him when he said it, as if to say, "I'm going to upset Sean here. I'm going to say this is going to upset Sean." I think there was a bit of that to it. I don't know. Do you know it? Like you said, you'd taken the two cues out there a few times, but was that the first time you actually switched in a match?
The match against Chris was the first time I'd actually felt I needed to switch, or the signs were there that if I was going to try it, this was the match. Unfortunately, when I tried it, I think I had about five shots after trying it because I didn't score a point after Chris glued me to the ball cushion for two frames, so there was nothing I could do about it.
He went granite, didn't he? Lovely.
I thought it was a bit of a cheap shot. I was a cheap laugh in the crowd. That's absolutely fine. And as I say, I'm very happy to take a joke. But you know, I have a few shots of my own to take. So there'll come a time where I get the chance to make a little cheap shot at Ronnie's expense. And you know what? I'll probably take it after that. But remember this, Ron. If you're going to tell jokes, they have to be funny. They have to make sense.
Wow.
Otherwise, you just look silly.
Okay, there you go. There you are. Just talk us through it then. Now, we've talked about this, so I understand. And we had a long chat on Thursday night about it and about lots of different things about this. So just for anyone that doesn't understand what you're actually doing, taking the multiple cues out, let's explain it to them. So what is your idea? What's your thinking? Because I don't think anyone's ever done it before, or it's certainly a long time since they've tried it. What are you doing? What's your aim?
So what I'm trying to do is, you know, I'm taking to, let's start at the very basics of the game to try and explain it. If you strike the cue ball in the middle, it should go in a straight line towards your intended target. The minute you strike the cue ball off center with side spin, the cue ball goes in a small arc on its way to the object ball. And the whole game of snooker really is about controlling that arc. Now, we refer as pros to that arc as either cue ball deflection or throw. And you'll often hear in commentary the commentators referring to things about the throw of the cue ball, or that threw too much, or it didn't throw him. That's what we're referring to. And that throw of the cue ball, that cue ball deflection on its journey to the object ball, is affected by the playing conditions. From one day to the next, you can strike the cue ball in the same place, the same way, and it travels in a different path because of the playing conditions, not because of you. And so what I'm trying to do is take the two cues out into the arena with me so that when I feel that the playing conditions have now deteriorated to the point where it's affecting the path of the cue ball, I switch to cue two, which will then make the difference. Now, for me, the giveaway signs are when I start to miss shots on what we call the thin side, where I'm not getting that deflection that I'm expecting, then I can make the switch. And that's what happened in the Wakelin match halfway through it. I'd made, let's say, half a dozen mistakes, and they were all thin. I'd missed two or three pots, thin. I'd hit a few safety shots, thin. So I thought, well, if I'm going to try it, now's the time. Now, that second cue is a 9.5 millimeter, 58-inch long cue. There's more end mass in the tip. And so when I play that with the same amount of side spin as my ordinary cue, I get a little bit more cue ball deflection. And as I say, I just didn't have enough shots with it against Chris because Chris was so good for me to know whether it worked or not. So it's an opportunity missed, unfortunately. I'll be taking them to China with me for the international championships. And it's, you know, it's just research. But, it's called progress. And no one likes change. I've taken quite a lot of criticism for it on social media, which isn't a great shock, I have to say. We just push on. There was a time people thought the earth was flat.
Some still do.
Some still do. There was a time that people thought the sun orbited the earth. And golfers and all lots of other sports, you know, the golfers of yesteryear, when they invented their hickory shafted clubs, they used to play with wooden clubs as well, as did Bjorn Borg and McEnroe. They were playing with wooden tennis rackets. They thought that was the absolute peak of their sport. We've now seen a couple of players at Belfast last week using carbon composite cues or carbon fibre cues. Things are changing slowly, but they definitely are changing. It's been fascinating for me to watch how much, you know, resistance there is to even just a small change that taking two cues out into an arena has brought my way. People don't like change, but it is coming nonetheless.
So by the Welsh Open then in Llandudno in February, we can expect you with headphones on, glove, carbon fibre cue, raised shoes, also, yeah, everything basically. You need to try the lot.
Absolutely anything. I will try anything.
Heart rate monitors.
The one thing I won't do is wear a chalk pouch.
There you go. You have heard it from the magician himself. He will not wear a chalk pouch, but everything else is fair game, Sean. Yeah,
everything else is on the table.
There we go. Okay, there we are. What do you think? Is he right? Is he crackers? Is Ronnie right? Who knows? Let us know at 147 pod on social media. Now, sticking on Ronnie O'Sullivan, his trailer for his movie came out last week. This is the long awaited, people called it a Netflix film. It's never been a Netflix film. It's been produced by an independent company. I don't think it was ever due to be on Netflix. It's actually going to be on Amazon Prime. It's going to be in cinemas on the 21st of November, Amazon Prime from the 23rd of November. Now I've got to say, I got a little bit, I quite enjoyed when the trailer came out. The first voice on the trailer is mine, which is really weird because it's a movie trailer. Okay. really strange to hear my voice on a movie trailer. That was odd. Now, I've had to sign a release because I'm in this. I'm in this announcing him, I think, at the Scottish Open in Llandudno. Still weird. Always will be. And so I'm in it on that bit, which is, for me, I mean, that's a bit of an honour, is that, to be honest. Now, one of the really interesting things about this, the production company that have made it, I believe, is David Beckham's. Or he certainly has a hand in it. Now, he shared that trailer on his Instagram. His Instagram has 85 million followers. So whatever anyone thinks about Ronnie O'Sullivan, whatever anyone thinks about certain things, this whole thing is taking snooker to a bigger audience, full stop, okay? Drive to Survive, the Formula One series that went on, has brought millions, globally, millions of new followers to Formula One. It's brought millions of new fans to it, okay? Welcome to Wrexham. Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds buying Wrexham Football Club. That documentary, you can't get a ticket to go and watch Wrexham. You cannot buy a ticket for love nor money to go and watch Wrexham. A Ronnie O'Sullivan film, which is the insight into his life and his life in snooker, being shared by David Beckham to 85 million people, going out on Amazon Prime all over the world, for me, propels snooker. And it's got to be a good thing, Sean.
Absolutely phenomenal. I mean, if we can draw any similarities or have any of the results that the examples you've just given had to their respective sports, it would be absolutely phenomenal for snooker to ride that wave and to be, you know, seen by a different audience around the world. Fantastic. It's great to see. I'd forgotten about this, you know, because this was all about Ronnie's seventh world championship win a couple of seasons ago now. And of course, you never know what goes on behind the scenes, do you? Why it's taken so long to come to the forefront. But it's here, and I'm sure it'll be fantastic to look at. I'm sure it'll be great. But wouldn't it be great for snooker to have the reach that these other sports have had? That would be incredible for the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It's got to be a good thing. So, listen, go watch it. Go have a look. It's out, as I said, in selected cinemas, 21st of November, and then on Amazon Prime from the 23rd of November. The trailer looks amazing. I'm not just saying that because my voice is on it. The trailer looks amazing. It really does. And it looks like a proper insight into the life of the greatest of all time, which he is. So check that out. I think it's At the Edge of Everything, I think it's called, which, should be really, really good. Anyway, it's time for us to have... Oh, Sean, did you want to say something? Or are you just scratching your cheek? I thought you were raising your finger for a second. Okay, we're going to take a very, very short break. And after that, it will be time for Sean to rant.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. Now, actually, just before we do your rant, Sean, I want to tell you a little story. Now, I mentioned Tai earlier on. Tai Chung Chu, who he's Chinese, He basically seems to run Chinese snooker media. I'll be honest, I've known Ty for a number of years, and I don't actually know what he does, but he seems to run snooker media in China. He's great.
He did actually say something very similar about you to me recently.
I can imagine. He sees exactly what I do, and he probably still doesn't know what I do. Now, what Ty does do, he does a lot of interviews with the Chinese players who maybe don't speak such great English, and because they don't speak such great English, we often don't hear the things that they say. You know, a lot of them, they come through interpreters. Now, Ty told me a story on Sunday, which I'm sure he's quite happy for me to recant. He was telling me a story about Zhang Ander. Now, Zhang Ander reached the final of the English Open just the other week. He's been on the tour for a number of years. And Ty interviewed him, and he was talking about Zheng Jihao, the new player on the tour, who's quite a young player. Now, he told me this story that Zhang Ander had told him about Zhang dropped off the tour. And when he dropped off the tour, he was doing some commentary work for Chinese television. And he's commentating on matches, and he got a message from Jing Jihao's dad. I think Jing was about 16 at the time. And he messaged him, and he said, look, you know, you were on the tour. We look up to you. I don't feel like my son is progressing with the coaching that he's got and everything else. Would you be willing to coach my son? And Zhang Ander looked at it, and he thought, well, I'm off the tour. I'm commentating. Yeah, I do a bit of coaching. You know, why not? So he starts coaching Jing Jihao. Jing Jihao ends up moving into Zhang Ander's house with Zhang Ander and his mum, right? And Zhang Ander's mum buys him a bike so he can go to the club to practice every day. So what started happening was that Jing Jihao would get up early because he was keen to go and practice. He'd set off on his bike, and every day Zhang Ander would then get up and he'd go in his car, and halfway to the snooker club, he'd pass Jing Jihao on this bike that his mum has bought him to ride. And then Zhang Ander got back on the tour unexpectedly quickly through a certain event. And a couple of years later, he's now watched Jing Jihao get on the tour, and he's still got this bike that Zhang Ander's mum bought him. And I just thought it was lovely that you've got Zhang Ander there, who's helping out this young lad with some coaching. He's got back on the tour. He's actually moved in with his family, which is like different level. And now he's watching this lad, and he was saying how Zhang's got a real pride in watching Jing Jihao now on the tour, and it is a real sort of master and apprentice job. And I thought it was brilliant, to be honest. I thought it was just lovely. And there's a lot of those stories about the Chinese players we don't hear because a lot of them don't speak great English. And I just thought it was great. Ty gave me a little bit of a window into their world, really. I thought it was just nice.
No, that's lovely. That's a lovely story. But and I'm sure, like all the British and Irish and European players who obviously speak, you know, good English. You know, there's so many of these stories. You know, the story of Neil Robertson coming to the UK with 500 quid in his pocket and this, that. You know, it's like, you know, there are people who've never seen snooker who know that story now. You know, it's like part of snooker folklore, isn't it? But because of nothing more than the language barrier. And I guess that's it. You know, there are stories like that are going missing.
Yeah.
From our tapestry of stories in the snooker world, and it's a shame. So that's a lovely story to hear.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was lovely, so I thought I'd share it with you. There you go. Okay, Sean, do you have a rant for me this week?
I do.
You do. Okay, wonderful. Well, as always, let me get my stopwatch ready. You have 1 minute and 47 seconds from the moment I say rant to the sound of the klaxon. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, Sean Murphy. 1 minute and 47 seconds. 3, 2, 1, rant.
Okay, well, the rant this time is topical, and it's fresh in the memory because I've just come back from the Northern Ireland Open, as have you. And anyone who spends any time travelling for work, for business, for whatever it might be, will have experienced what I'm just about to say. And I'm absolutely sick of it. I am sick of it. You check into a hotel, and of course, most hotels now give you the key card, and it's like a little credit card size thing that you use on your door when you get there. Everything's fine. You take all your luggage up to your room. Everything's grand. You check into your room. Everything works perfectly first time. Within 24 hours, you're back at the reception asking them to cut your key card again because the key card has stopped working. And it is absolutely infuriating. And then the poor person who's on the desk at reception asks the killer question. Have you had this card anywhere near your phone? And that's where it all goes wrong. In fact, I think it's that that's more infuriating than the card not working. Because define close. Define what near my phone means. Oh, and by the way, it's 2023. My entire life is on my phone. Of course it's been near my phone. It's been in my pocket, on the side, or sometimes even in a wallet that attaches to the back of a... Of course it's been near the phone. What should I do? You know, leave one under the mat a mile apart. What do you mean, has it been near my phone? Why can't you start using cards, hotel chains, that don't stop working if they go within 50 metres of a mobile phone?
Okay. Sean.
I know. No.
Hoisted by your own petard, Sean. Hoisted by your own petard. Now, Sean, sorry, one for the kids there. Sean, you know these hotels you stay at? Do you know what most of them can do? Do you know? They can put your room key on your phone.
I know you're going to say put
phone.
The key card on your phone.
Put it on your phone, so you don't even need a card. You just need your phone. And then do you know what? Your phone, it doesn't match if it's close to other things. It'll still open your hotel room door. So it's 2023, Sean. What's wrong with you? Just get it put on your phone. What's your excuse?
My excuse is that it's twofold. One, I don't think that as many hotel chains as you think do that. I don't think it's as common as you think it is.
Do you know what you need to do? When you check in, right, just explain to them that you're all about multiples. Okay, you take multiple queues to the table. They need to give you multiple key cards. So if one stops working, as the conditions later on in the tournament deteriorate, you've got another fresh key card that hasn't been near your phone that you can use to open your door.
I suppose what I should do is when I'm staying in these hotels, I should just have 10 cards cut, shouldn't I, at reception, when I check in. Should have 10 room cards cut. I suppose the problem is, Phil, is that, you know, I'm not used to staying in these lower class hotels stay in on tour. You know, when you stay in like the Savoy and places like that, they have butlers for you. You don't have to worry about this type of thing. There's someone there to open you. You don't have to touch the door or interact you don't have to do any of this stuff. I suppose that's the problem, isn't it?
I was thinking, you know, when Jeeves goes near my phone, he can still open the door for me. I don't have a problem with that at all. It's all good.
No.
Says the man sat in a Holiday Inn Express in Glenrothes in Scotland. Doesn't quite work. Now, I do remember quite a few years ago.
So do you not agree with me then? So
yeah,
you,
I do.
Are you not a shared experience?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous that you can't, you know, put the key card in the other pocket to the one your mobile phone's in. Yeah, it is ridiculous. I remember checking into the Ricoh Arena, the hotel at the Ricoh Arena in Coventry when the Champion of Champions was on. And Jill Douglas was at the desk, right? Now, Jill, wonderful broadcaster, you know, works all over the world on all kinds of sports. And she was like, the key card doesn't work. It's the third time this week. It's stopped working. And they said, okay, have you had it near your mobile phone? And Jill, I mean, she is like literally the most pleasant lady you will ever, ever meet. And you could see the rage building up inside. And she's like, I live in hotels. I know not to keep it near my mobile phone. I still don't understand why I can't keep it near my mobile phone, but apparently I can't. Now, just give me a key card that works. And you could see she was fuming at that. But it's always a stock line, isn't it? I think their key cards just stopped working, to be honest. That's all it is. So there you go.
Maybe she just had a lapse in concentration.
Oh, that's one for the regular listeners. Okay, do you have that issue? Do you stay in hotels a lot? I do. And I just put the key card in my other pocket. But there you go. It's all good. At 147pod across all forms of social media. Now, the last podcast, we didn't get any listener questions in. So we're going to do some this week. Some of these might be from a little while ago because we've not done this for a little while. So here we go. I will start the ball rolling with Tom Cusack or Cusack on Instagram. What do you think about a comeback for Power snooker. Now, we've mentioned power snooker on the podcast before. Sean, very, very briefly, tell the people out there that don't know what power snooker was or is, what it is or was.
Yeah, it was snooker's sort of step into 2020 cricket or stuff like that. It was completely different, and I think for that reason it didn't work. It was too different to traditional snooker. Obviously, we've got the shootout, which, you know, when you turn it on and look at it, looks like snooker. Of course, there are different rules, and you've got the timed element. But power snooker was sort of too far down the other end of the spectrum, I think. I think there's room for something like that, and I would be open to, different formats and different styles. Again, you know, going back to the Ronnie documentary, that take the game to a different audience. And there's no question the success and the positive impact on the original long-form great game of Test cricket that, you know, 2020 cricket has had. And so I'd welcome that. But I think power snooker was just too different.
Yeah, power snooker's probably not it. I think we need something, whether it's a shootout-style Premier League, whether it's a best-of-three Premier League, you know, something like that, whether it's a World Cup. We could do something. The question is what? And I've pondered this so many times. I'm sure you have, and I know probably the best minds in the sport have. I'm not counting us in there, by the way. And you know, we're still to come up with something. So again, throw it out there. What do people think? What does the sport need? It probably does need that punchy element. We have the shootout once a year. Should there be more shootouts? I don't know. Should we have more of those to try and get more excitement? There's other broadcasters now. You know, there's no snooker on Sky currently. Channel 4 are pushing sport forward. There's no snooker yet on Channel 4. There's other broadcasters. For other broadcasters, there could be other formats of the sport, and those, if we make those other formats right and exciting enough, it could attract those broadcasters in, which can only be a good thing. Other broadcasters, other sponsors as well, it could attract in, because it's something a little bit different. Who knows? I think we need something. I don't personally think power snooker's it. I think you're agreeing with that, Sean.
Yeah, not specifically power snooker, but I would be happy to go down a similar road.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we'll see what comes out. Sean.
Helen Wills got in touch on our Instagram account. She says, previously won tickets from us to watch snooker at Cheltenham and have bought tickets to go again this year. So this is obviously a dated question. Apologies,
yes,
Helen. But what impact does the audience being for or against you have on your game? As an audience member, what should I do or not do to support or encourage you? Well, it's a great question, this, because, you know, you have people coming to support all the time. And I must say, like, the support I and all the other players get, you know, around the world is phenomenal. We're so well supported by the crowds. But I don't really think there is, any do's or don'ts. I know when I've had friends or family come, never really want them to sit on, like, the front row. I don't really want, you know, them to be in direct eye line. But apart from that, you don't want to look into the crowd and see one of them being hoisted out and being thrown out. That's just embarrassing. But you know, between that and getting thrown out, there's quite a bit large scope there that you can get involved with and do as you wish. I think just have a great time. I'm always wondering though, you know, you get these people who shout out, like, you know, go on and go. I'm never sure whether that helps the player or not. I'm not sure, especially if you know the person.
I think that's what Helen's asking. You know, if,
yeah,
for you, for example, you pot a great pot, a big long pot. If you hear someone in the crowd going, go on, Sean, does that big you up? Do you like that?
Yeah, no, definitely, yeah. I think it puts you under a little bit more pressure, especially if you know the person. I think Davis used to have a thing called the Romford Roar back in the early 80s, where he said, funnily, in a book of his once, that Barry Hearn had told them all if they didn't need throat pastilles by the end of the night, they wouldn't be coming again. He wanted them screaming all night. So I think there's an element you can use your fans to, put the other opponent off and intimidate your opponent, stuff like that. So there's all that goes into it. I know players over the years that have positioned certain members of their guests in, you know, behind pockets and things, and they've been instructed to put you off and all sorts. Like, there's been all sorts go on over years. So Helen, as I say, this is obviously a dated question, but if you do come to any future matches, feel free to shout as loudly as you want.
There you go, Helen. Shout, but turn your phone off. Whatever you do, turn your phone off, right? That's the main thing you can do to support every player, okay? Just turn your phone off. Next up then, Steve Sharp on Instagram. Great pod. Thank you, Steve. Always put the compliments on there. What's the most number of snookers required and successfully obtained by a player to win a frame in a professional match? No idea. John?
Yeah, I don't know the absolute definitive answer to this. The first match that springs to mind was there was a frame won by John Spencer against Jimmy White, and it's on YouTube somewhere, where I think John comes to the table and he needs something silly like seven snookers or something. And this is sort of in Jimmy's pomp in the mid-80s, and he plays a couple of shots he shouldn't have played. And before you know it, John's got back into the frame. And John actually did go ahead and win that frame. I actually think that there might have been more. I'm going to throw somebody like Cliff Thorburn or Eddie Charlton into the mix. And as I say, I'm not sure what the answer is to that, but I'm sure their names might be attached to it. And that was a funny thing from the Northern Ireland Open, I thought, just gone, was there seemed to be quite a few frames won where the player needed quite a few snookers to win. Of course, the mind springs straight back to young Robbie McGuigan, who lost to Anthony McGill from what looked like an unlosable position. And he sort of half celebrated the victory.
Yeah.
When McGill still needed three snookers. And of course, that's, you know, in John Spencer's terms, three snookers is nothing.
Yeah.
So that would be a tough lesson for Robbie to take. But yeah, I think it's six or seven, something like that.
I think John Spencer, was it six against Jimmy White?
Something like that.
British Open, for some reason, that springs to mind. But does anyone know better? That was interesting, that, you know, because, yeah, Robbie fist bumped. He was like one frame from victory. I think, had he potted a green or something? He was one frame from victory and he fist bumped, which I think it was just his enthusiasm. I think it's his youthful enthusiasm. Yeah. You know, you're playing a player like McGill. He's a Crucible semi-finalist. He's a fine snooker player. You know, you're going to be excited in your home event and everything. I had no problem with that at all. And afterwards, Anthony just said to him, look, I've no problem with the fist pump, but do it when you've won. And he got some stick on social media, which, as we've talked about before, players get stick on social media. And Robbie actually came out on social media and said, no, you've all got this wrong. Anthony was an absolute gentleman to me before and after the game. And what he said to me was that he was being constructive. He wasn't having a go at me. He was literally just saying, look, no problem with it. But, you know, in future, wait till you've won, because you can lose your own concentration in doing that. And I think he's right. So, you know, I think that got a bit misconstrued. But you tell us, do you know? Someone out there will. Someone out there's going to know, okay? What's the most number of snookers? I think it's six. But I'm sure Robbo would go for eight, wouldn't he? Neil Robertson would go for eight. He'd go for eight snookers.
Oh, yeah.
And he'd have a good chance of getting them. So anyway, there you go. Don't know.
This wasn't the question, but going back to our original question when we started with Tom Cusack about power snooker, I actually think we should do away with snookers. If it were up to me, the minute the frame was over, mathematically, the frame's over.
Oh, wow.
But, it's not up to me. And so snookers continue. But I think they're a peculiar eccentricity of our sport, that once mathematically the games can't be won, we're allowed to push on to try and trip our opponent up. It's weird.
Wow. That's a big shout, that, Sean.
Yeah, I think snookers, I think it's a really weird thing. And I actually think for people who aren't in our bubble of snooker, who love the game through and through, I think it's one of the things that puts them off, because they go, oh, well, hang on a minute, there's three reds left. That's a possible 51. Player A is 75. Why is the other player carrying on?
Yeah.
The game's over.
It does seem a bit strange. Like.
It's like Fergie time gone mad, isn't it?
Yeah, it does seem a bit funny. Okay, there you go.
Another question from our Instagram account. Adam Lang this time gets in touch. He says, how long does a pot have to be to be classed as a long pot? Good question. This is a question I've asked myself of the people who do these things a lot. Because in my mind, a long pot is the distance the cue ball has to travel to strike the object ball. I don't think it has any. It shouldn't have anything to do with how far the object ball has to travel. No. Because once the cue ball struck it, that's its job over.
Yeah, it's got to be the gap between cue ball and object ball, surely. That makes it long.
But it's not. It's not.
Really?
And it's quite a grey area. The answer is something along the lines of, if one of the balls has to travel over, I think, 5 or 6 feet in the shot.
So it doesn't matter which ball. Wow.
It doesn't matter which ball. Now, for me, as a, you know, someone who's been in snooker all their life, that strikes me as completely backwards.
I love the vagueness of 5 or 6 feet, by the way. It's like there's not an actual measurement.
Yeah, I know. Nobody seems to know. There'll be somebody listening to this who does these stats for the broadcasting around the world who will be screaming at their device now listening to this. But the long pot should be measured on how far the cue ball travels to get to the object ball. That's what a definition of a long pot is. But not according to the powers that be.
So, Adam, in answer to your question, how long does a long pot have to be classed as a long pot? The answer is long. That's the top and bottom of it. It's got to be long. Okay, I'm going to move on a little bit now. Our old friend, Japheth Thundercat, not Jaffa Thundercat, as you once called him, on Instagram. What lasts longer, the elation of winning or the pain of a defeat?
Oof.
That's a big question, though.
Oh, that's a big question, yeah. I mean, are we talking, do you think, in terms of a final of a tournament?
Yeah. Yeah, let's go with that. Yeah, I would say that.
I think the elation of winning lasts longer. I think whilst losing, particularly losing a final, especially if it's a big, big final, like one of the Triple Crown events, you know, is upsetting and it's painful. And I think if it doesn't upset you, you're in the wrong game.
I suppose earlier in the competition, the elation of winning... So, for example, take your game against Chris in Belfast. The elation of winning is only there that night because the next day you're playing again, aren't you? So I'm guessing earlier on in an event, the disappointment or the pain of a defeat is going to last longer because you've then not got another match, have you? So you, I suppose you dwell on it, don't you?
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair comment. Yeah, that's fair comment.
Yeah, so I suppose it's sort of what you've got to either put your mind on it or take your mind off. There you go. Right, we'll have one more listener question before we move on to our pointless question. And I'm going to ask you this one. Our Scottish friend living in Germany, exiled in Germany, Judy in disguise on Twitter, she asks the question everyone's been asking Sean. How does Sean get his hair to be so shiny? Genuine question from a listener. You've got to answer it. Come on.
Well, it's actually upset me, this question, because I specifically tried to use hair product that takes away shine. I don't want it to be shiny.
Because you're just naturally that shiny, Sean. Is that right?
Judy, I've been trying to grow my hair for the last 6 months. But in honour of this question, I think I'm actually going to have it cut and then I can go back to using more of a matte product. I don't want shiny hair. So how do I get it so shiny? I've got absolutely no idea. But I don't want it to be shiny. I'm trying to stay away from shiny. No one has ever said the word shiny as much in the history of man. Well, so I don't know is the answer, but I think tomorrow I'm going straight to the barbers.
Just for the record, any hair questions for me are completely off limits. I used to have a 4 head. I've now got a 5 head. It's rapidly becoming a 6 head. So keep the hair questions for Sean, please, if you could. If you do have any questions, please get them in. We've still got a couple held off, a few held over, actually, for the next podcast, but at 147pod across all forms of social media. Any questions, be they Sean's hair related, be they snooker related, be they anything else related, get them in at 147pod. We will endeavour to answer as many as we can. Right, we need to round the podcast off with our pointless question, as we always do. The pointless question this week, Sean, is, would you rather snitch on your best friend for a crime they committed or go to jail wrongly for the crime they committed?
So, I mean, that's the it's the worst possible situation to be in, isn't it?
So basically what we're saying is grass on your mate or take the punishment for their crime.
I think there's one key element to that that's missing is if you go to jail, how long do you go for?
Oh, I don't think it matters. Either way, you're condemning them to it.
You would never ever want to grass or snitch on your mate, would you? You would never want to do that. But if you're going to go to jail for 6 months or 5 years, that's a different kettle of fish.
So you just let me get this right then. So a friend of yours does a crime, you know they've done that crime. If it's only in inverted commas 6 months, you would take that to not grass on them.
I think so. Yeah, if they were one of my like top mates, you know, in the circle of trust, in the inner sanctum, you would never ever want to grass on one of your mates. Never in a million years.
Okay, so just for example, totally fictitious, obviously.
But if it's a 5 year stretch, they're on their own.
So totally fictitious then, obviously, you know, made up. Your good mate Ronnie O'Sullivan say commits a crime. Would you snitch on him, or would you take that? Would you take that going to jail for the crime he committed?
It's probably a discussion we could pick up when I went to visit him in prison, isn't it?
You're a bad man, Murphy. Okay, Sean, we're coming up the next 2 weeks. You are away to China, I believe.
Hang on a minute. Hang on. What would you do?
Depends who it is. Depends what they've done. I think you're right. I think it depends on your level of friendship. You know, if it was a really close friend, I'd take the pain. As I said, if it was a really close friend, I'd take the pain. How many Qs are you taking into prison? Is out of interest? Because.
I could probably whittle a few away in prison.
Yeah,
you'd
probably start making your own. Go up there with John Paris. There you go. No, I think you're right. I think it depends who it is and what they've done and what the punishment will be. So I don't think it's as easy as just answering like that. So it's clearly a terrible, pointless question. So China next.
That's one of the more ridiculous, pointless questions that you've come up with.
Yeah, go on, I'll take that one. Actually, we've had a few decent listener pointless questions. I think Judy in disguise, who asked about your wonderfully shiny hair, sent one in. If anyone wants to send any in, send them in. We'll use yours instead of mine. So, China next.
Thank God.
What, thank God you're going to China?
Thank God. Yeah, no, China next. Heading to China over the weekend. Really looking forward to getting out there again for the International Championship. Fantastic. That tournaments in that part of the world are back on our radar and back on the calendar. It's great to be busy again. It's great to be back out there and play in front of, you know, great crowds, big tournaments. And I'm looking forward to going.
Absolutely. Fantastic. Well, good luck, Sean. Wish you all the best, as I'm sure the listeners do as well. We will be back on the 147 podcast in around about 2 weeks' time. We try and keep it to a fortnight if we can. So it'll be around about 2 weeks' time. As I keep saying, in the meantime, 147 pod all over social media. The words 147 pod on social media. Hit us up with questions, comments, and everything else. But for now, it's a very goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from him.
Take care. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. acast.com.